Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, if there's ever a space I love playing into here on Circles of Change, given my engineering background, it's indeed in the technology space. But on top of that, having been in the study of human behavior, blending the two together. So what a delight for me to welcome here on the show from Boston today, Ben Waber. Good morning, Ben. How are you today?
Doing well.
Terrific. Let me introduce Ben. He's CEO of Sociometric Solutions, which is a management services firm that uses social sensing technology to understand companies' internal communication patterns and then drive innovative, transformative ideas from there. Based in Boston, Ben is also a visiting scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Media Lab, where he received his PhD. He was previously a senior researcher at the Harvard Business School. So Ben's work has been featured in major media outlets such as Wired, NPR, and the New York Times. Now he can add Circles of Change to that, right, Ben?
Exactly.
And he has been tapped as a thought leader to speak at technology company meetings such as those at Google, EMC, and Samsung. Ben's research was selected for the Harvard Business Review's list of breakthrough ideas and also MIT Technology Review's top 10 emerging technologies. So I'm certain our listeners have had their whistles wetted. It goes, our topic, Ben's newly released book, is People Analytics, How Social Sensing Technology Will Transform Business and What It Tells Us About the Future of Work. And one might really say that this is yet the next big thing in big data. So, Ben, a culmination of, I'm sure, years of work, now holding in front of you a book. What was it like taking the first one out of the box?
Yeah, well, that was pretty interesting. I mean, it is something where, you know, you finally have this thing in front of you, but it's at this point, 7 years of work,
yes, exactly.
Really going into the book. And then, of course, the book itself is a journey, is a whole other journey. But it's great that we sort of now have something that we can give to people and really encapsulates a lot of the work, not just that we've done, but also that other people have been doing in this field over the last decade.
So for those who might not be aware of some of the buzzwords that you and I might apt to fall into, why don't we level up and start with that word, people analytics? What is that?
Yeah, so people analytics is a very new term, actually, but the concept itself is relatively old. And really the idea is to try to put numbers and put data to really understand how people are interacting and collaborating and behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, particularly, I'm focused on the workplace. And when you think about it, we've really been doing this, since really humanity, emerged a couple hundred thousand years ago, where we were just using our qualitative observations to really try to understand, how do you put people together, what people mesh, what people don't mesh. And then, a couple hundred years ago, we started trying to put numbers on it, using things like surveys, using sort of more formal ethnographies. And those certainly gave us much better data and cleaner data, but they didn't really change the way that we organize people, that we run companies, that we run governments. But today, we have this new technology emerging in terms of sensing technology and digital communication. And what that technology enables us to do is really put very hard numbers behind these behaviors, literally being able to count how often do you talk to certain people, how do you talk to them, what's your tone of voice. Do you interrupt them a lot? Do you tend to be very interactive when you talk? When you email people, is it something where you send really long emails? Do you respond to people quickly? And all this data is coming in now in real time, and it enables you to do fundamentally new things and really change the way we think about managing companies.
Yes, but I would suspect it also scares the living daylights out of us, perhaps, that really Big Brother is watching me when I don't even realize they're watching me. It's sort of like the parent that gifts their teenager a cell phone and doesn't, oh, by the way, tell them they enacted the GPS feature, so now they can watch where the teen is going.
Exactly, and that's a really important point. I mean, something that's interesting is that if you look in the U.S. specifically, it's sort of the Wild West at this point, right, where pretty much anything goes when it comes to this sort of data analysis, particularly within companies. Now, that's not the way we've dealt with data. We've been sort of we have people opt into our projects.
Mm-hmm, right.
We give people dummy badges that don't collect data so that their boss won't know that they're not participating. We don't give companies individual data. But the issue is that if you look at legally, companies could force their employees to sort of give up this kind of data, and they could look at that individual data, and they could track people around the office. And that really defeats the whole purpose of this kind of technology. It would, you know, completely create, you know, a poisonous environment for employees. And, you know, obviously that's a society that I think most of us don't want to live in.
Mm-hmm. So let's, again, just so to bring our listeners who haven't had the advantage, of course, yet reading such a wonderful book, People Analytics. So indeed, this sensing technology can be placed in your company badge or in your company provided cell phone, right? And so what kind of data are you actually going to collect then?
Yeah, so what's interesting is when you think about your company ID badge, most of them already have sensors in it. They have a little RFID chip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little radio chip, and that's what you use to, you know, tap into a door.
Right.
So if you put little readers in the ceiling, you could actually figure out where people are. But again, besides being creepy, it doesn't tell you really how people are collaborating.
Yes.
So what we've done is we've added a number of additional sensors to these badges. What we're looking at is, so we look at location, but we don't use RFID in our case. We're using Bluetooth, so it's what's like on your cell phone.
Sure.
Then to figure out actually sort of who you're facing, we use an infrared transceiver. And that's like what's on a remote control for
mm-hmm.
TV,
mm-hmm.
which is line of sight communication. And on top of that, we have two microphones. So you've got one on the front and one on the top. And the microphones don't record what you say, but in real time, they're doing voice analysis.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at your tone of voice,
your speed,
your volume modulation,
yeah,
exactly.
Speed, yeah.
And then lastly, we have an accelerometer, which is the motion sensor, the same one you have in your cell phone, that helps detect not just how much you're moving around, but also your posture. So you can see, you know, are you leaning in during a conversation? Are you mimicking the posture of the person you're talking to? Again, and these things have been found to be very important, not just in our work, but in decades of social psychology research.
Well, you can understand that, too, because quite often how people think in meetings that communicating is what's being said verbally, but actually it's the nonverbals that's transmitting more knowledge back and forth than sometimes we even as humans know to sense.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point that we've seen just very strongly come out in the data. One of the interesting studies that I talk a little bit about in the book was actually around people giving business plan pitches to venture capitalists.
Okay, yeah.
And so there's a panel of VCs, and you have you know, them all rating these 5-minute business plan pitches based on you know, the quality of the business plan, the quality of the team,
right?
But also the quality of the presentation.
You bet. 5-minute
presentation. And what was interesting is, you know, the VCs don't always agree about 40% of the time. But all those ratings essentially boiled down into one number. They were all very highly correlated with each other. And the question was, you know, could we actually predict those ratings just by looking at these social signals, these voice features that we're mining out from the badges? And it turned out that we could predict with about 40% of the variance
mm-hmm.
of these VC responses. So we were essentially as good as a VC at rating the pitches without looking at the content.
And even in the content, yes.
Exactly.
And so now I can also think that you folks are going to now create a branch where you're going to have people lining up to say, okay, so teach me the nonverbal communication I should try to manage as I go and present to a venture capitalist.
Right, and this is sort of the thing, right? It was interesting. We've even been working actually with the Kennedy School at Harvard to deploy this in developing countries to actually help people get sort of these loans in between
mm-hmm.
microfinance and small business loans.
Sure.
The way that they typically give them out is they have people fill out aptitude tests, but essentially what we're also doing is having them give their business plan pitch to a computer, right? And that becomes a major factor in how they're rated. Yeah, and I think to your point, there's this idea that, well, you know, if you learn how to, you know, you learn these signals, then you can fake it. And I say, you're absolutely right. If you learn how to talk in this sort of way, you're gonna fool our algorithm. But you know what? You'd also fool a person.
Yeah,
so I sort
right.
of feel okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the classic, you can run, but you can't hide stuff.
Yeah.
It will still sneak out whether or not you realize it.
Yep.
For those who've just tuned in, we're speaking with Ben Waber, and his book is called People Analytics, How Social Sensing Technology Will Transform Business and What It Tells Us About the Future of Work. So I want that question. So what is this telling us about the future of work?
Well, what's interesting is with these sort of features, so you're collecting them at the millisecond level, and the things we were just talking about, you know, we're talking about looking at one person for 5 minutes. And think about that kind of predictive accuracy. You know, 5 minutes worth of data on one person, and we're doing as well as, again, as people. Then think about what if you have that sort of data, not just for 5 minutes, not just for one person, but for months or years across, you know, thousands or millions of people, right? And what sort of things could you learn about how people work? And what's really interesting is with this sort of technology, now you can start to really drill down into what are the levers that we as individuals, but also organizations and teams, have at their disposal when they're organizing people.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about what's really important at work, and you look across all the companies where we've been deployed. By far, the most predictive thing of how happy you are, how productive you are, how productive the team is in the organization is really about how people communicate with each other across a wide variety of fields. And what's interesting is when you look at how companies typically manage that, it tends to fall into, you know, going into the org chart, saying who reports to who or who, you know, who should we have meetings with. But that represents a very, very small portion of what actually happens in the workplace. The vast majority of stuff that goes on is people talking around the water cooler, people eating lunch together, these sort of informal chats that really hold the company together and help information flow much more effectively.
Which makes it, by the way, for those of us that are now in the baby boom generation, that the shift away from feeling like you are allowed or encouraged to have lunch with your colleagues, because that might be viewed as a waste of time, that the whole dynamic in work has really shifted away from, in some regards, that high-quality endeavor. I mean, look at the companies that put in lots of money and invest to put in nice company cafeterias, only to find out that people go dine and dash, grab their food and go back and sit in front of the screen for another hour of keyboarding.
Yeah, and actually one of the companies that we've worked with had exactly that problem, where they had a great cafeteria, but everybody was eating lunch at their desk.
Mm-hmm.
But what you could show with this sort of data is I could actually tell them, how much money does a company make when two employees eat lunch together? Right?
Wow. Yeah.
And so that's something where now you can start to have a really data-driven argument around this sort of stuff. And, you know, what's interesting is you see there are some companies today that start to get that this stuff is important. Like Google is a great example. I mean, Google is investing hundreds of millions of dollars in space. They're, you know, working tirelessly to make sure that these serendipitous interactions happen, that people are eating lunch together. But for a lot of companies, that it's a very big investment. And, you know, there's a question of, you know, really what is the ROI on this?
Mm-hmm.
And because we can tie these communication patterns to outcomes, whether the company has productivity data or whether it's just assessments that we've gotten from that company or from other companies, then we can start to say, again, what are the value of even these single communications? And I think that's what really starts to change this whole discussion into around, you know, how can we create an environment, you know, whether that's a physical environment, whether that's the culture, it could be the organizational chart as well, but how do we create an environment that is going to naturally get people to interact and collaborate in a way that's going to make them happiest and most effective?
You bet. And we know that ties it into the communication. Again, we're speaking with Ben Waber. His book is People Analytics. You can learn more by going to sociometricsolutions.com. Ben, one of the and wonderful, by the way, your book is so easy to read. You know, and for a PhD scientist, I applaud that you also live in the other side of the world. Either that or you had a darn good editorial team with you.
Hopefully some of both.
I'm certain it is, because you're extremely eloquent here in our interview. But then one of the anchoring cases that's here that really brings the story to light, of course, is you're working with a call center and how to help them maximize employees spending time on their breaks. Tell us a little bit about that case, because it's so foundational for your messages here.
Yeah, I think call centers are extremely interesting because they've essentially been managed one way, you know, for 60 years, really since their inception, where, you know, 60 years ago, you might have had a call center with 100 people. And because they were so small, when they organized them, they would only have one person go on a break at any given time. And the reasoning makes sense, right? If you have 20 people take a break at the same time, you just can't handle all the calls coming in.
Right, and then people get put on hold, and now you're in trouble digging out.
Exactly. And then, you know, and so this just sort of continued, even though today we have call centers that have tens of thousands of employees. But when we started this work with Bank of America, they thought that something different was going on because they have call centers all across the country, you know, with same organizational structure, same employee demographics, same training, but very different performance. And, you know, they thought that it had something to do with the culture of these call centers, but, you know, they had no idea what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in with the badges and we just said, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to look at how do call center employees communicate with each other. Now, this might seem a little weird because, again, from the company's perspective, if you're not on the phone, you're essentially wasting your time.
That's right. Yeah,
right?
That's the impression.
But, right, and that's the impression.
Right.
But, you know, we wanted to see really, did these communication patterns actually drive outcomes? And what was really interesting is when you looked at the data, it turned out that people who had the most cohesive networks were completing calls in about half the time as the people with the least cohesive network. And so to put some numbers on it, what you mean by cohesion is really saying, who do you talk to and how much do those people talk to each other? So are you in a really tight-knit group or are you in a more sort of dispersed group? And it was an incredibly strong effect. What was interesting is, you know, sociologically, this makes a lot of sense because, first of all, if you haven't worked in a call center, probably most of us have called call centers before, they're not exactly the happiest place on earth.
Oh, no. In fact, there's never you don't ever get a call that says, I love your company. Your product is fabulous. No.
Yeah.
It's just this negative black cloud that's coming at you 24/7.
Yeah. I mean, you pick up the phone and basically your job is people yelling at you for stuff that's not your fault. Right?
Right.
And what's, you know, so then on top of that, right, whenever you take a break, no one you know is on a break. So if you have a really tough call at 9:30 a.m., the whole rest of the day you're stewing about it. And then when, you know, 5 p.m. rolls around, you just want to go home. Don't want to talk to anybody, you just want to go home. And it's no surprise that turnover in call centers in the U.S. is 40% a year. It's huge.
Yep.
Right? But so if you have these tight-knit networks, then imagine you get the chance to tell one person you know that, you know, you had a tough call or something rough's going on at home. Then that person is going to tell all the people that you know, and you'll have this network around you that's going to support you, you know, through that day or through that week. And so, okay, so what was interesting is you also saw a relationship between sort of having these cohesive networks and reduced stress at work. We can actually detect stress by looking at changes in your voice. In this case, we also had survey data on it. But the reason that you could also directly connect this with productivity and sort of how long it takes you to complete calls is because when you look at how these people are paid, your bonus tends to be determined by how you compare to other people on your team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's a really big incentive to not share.
Because it's competitive.
Right, I mean, if I spend an hour with a customer, right, solving a problem, then, you know, I'm not going to tell you how I did that, because if you solve it in 5 minutes, it makes me look much worse by comparison. But, you know, if we, you know, we're friends, we know the same people, we're running the same circles, then I'm reasonably certain that if I give you a tip, it's going to come back to me. Because if you don't share with us in the future, well, then we're just all going to cut you out, right? And so you saw this, and it was, you know, this result, and it was really powerful, really compelling. And what we said is, well, what we're going to do is, you know, people already have, you know, coffee breaks that you give them. You give people 15-minute coffee breaks, but you typically stagger them. It turned out that about 80% of the interaction we observed was when people's lunch breaks would overlap by about 15 minutes.
15 minutes, exactly, yeah.
And so what we did is we said, all right, for half of these teams, we are going to change when they take breaks. So now everybody on a single team is going to have a break at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we come back 3 months later, so that this is normal practice. It's not like we just change something and then
switch it back.
You know, exactly. So people, you know, be happy about that. Come back 3 months later, and we look at their behavior using the badges. And of course, much more cohesive. I mean, about 18% more cohesive. And you look at their stress levels, and those also went down very significantly. But then you look at performance. And these people are completing calls, when we change their break structure, about 23% more quickly. And if you back that out across the entire company, it's worth about $15 million a year, conservatively.
Exactly, yeah. So that's where, again, this idea of using people analytics to drive the return on investment, and in some regards make it safe then for the management team to make some decisions or shift some things that might be viewed as unconventional or, you know, complete heresy, in fact.
Well, right, and I think that's an important point, because it's not like sort of this thought had never crossed the mind, especially of the employees. They understood that, you know, yeah, if I can vent to somebody for a little bit, it's going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, things have just been this way for 60 years, and you need data before you're going to be able to change, right? And this was just something where, even in something like a call center, where you think, how could communication be important, you're really able to demonstrate that sort of value. I mean, not to mention in, you know, fields that are all about collaboration, whether you talk about, you know, software development, or you talk about, you know, if you talk about consulting or all these things, you really see that these same patterns come out. And it's just, it's very interesting to see how universal this stuff is across all these different industries.
Well, Ben, again, for our listeners, we're speaking with Ben Waber, and his book is called People Analytics, and his company is Sociometric Solutions. You mentioned this book was seven years at least in the making, and of course yourself with your own PhD background in scientific studies. You know, is this just the right time for a lot of things to converge, that this would have come together, Ben? Because many times we have the soft thought about these things, but we don't have the hard technology to support us. In other words, give me a little bit of a snapshot or a view into all those technologies you talked about, RF devices and microphones and so on, that now can be embedded. I've got to think that some of these thoughts of people saying, I really wanted to uncover this social science behavior, but we haven't been able to do it because now the technology hasn't been there to cross-functionally merge it.
Well, that's absolutely right. It's something where a lot of the things that we build on top of, I mean, it's you know, decades of sociological theory, decades of management research, decades mm-hmm. of social science research. But what you're able to do now is just look at those questions and ask completely new questions, because you have these fundamentally new observational
yes,
tools.
That's right.
And it's the time where not only societally are we reaching a point where in some organizations this stuff is being hugely devalued, and the importance yeah. of communication, you know, is something where you say, well, I don't care if mm. you don't talk to anybody as long as you get your individual work done.
Yeah, we've heard that before, haven't we?
Well, right, and it's something where, you know, the data doesn't bear that out, first of all. And it also just doesn't even make logical sense when mm. you think about, you know, if you spend 5 hours of your day making 20 people 10% more productive, well, that should be your job.
Isn't that true?
Well, the issue is that we typically don't reward people for that sort of impact, and we couldn't measure it before, right? And with just the rapid miniaturization of sensor technology, the rapid proliferation of sensors across companies and in our daily lives, you know, in the form of cell phones or these ID cards, that really enables us to look at these things and to ask questions like, again, Mike, how much money does a company make when employees eat lunch together? You couldn't even ask that before, you know. And now all of a sudden we have those tools, we have the need, and so I think that's why you're seeing this really start to take off across a wide variety of areas.
Well, I think the other thing is, you know, while the subtitle for your book says how social sensing technology will transform business, what you're really putting out here, Ben, is a challenge. It's also going to transform the way people lead. And boy, if there's any group that might be scared off by the prospect of saying, you know, that isn't going to work anymore, it can be some of those that have been promoted through their lives for doing things a certain way. So this is a whole, you know, right frontal attack, shall I say, in a good way, though, to cause us to rethink even the precepts behind leadership.
Yeah, I think that's something that's going to be really interesting, is looking over, especially the next decade, about how this is really going to change the way the companies are managed. I mean, fundamentally, when you think about it, I mean, we sort of come from this era where we've really done things sort of based on gut instinct. And sometimes there's some, you know, backing behind what we do, but a lot of the times you do something because it feels right. And where we're going with this is something where we can start to be incredibly scientific, incredibly data-driven about all of these things that we previously thought were really soft. You know, and it's something where we're going to get to the point where when you make changes to organizations, instead of, you know, if you're doing restructuring, instead of spending hundreds of millions of dollars and years rolling it out across an entire company,
sure.
Well, you can start to do things with saying, well, let's change something for 50 people and we'll see what happens. You know, and you can do that not just one time, but hundreds of thousands of times across an organization, and really see, you know, how do different, you know, changes you make to the organization, be it cultural, be it, you know, formal, how do they actually impact the way that people work?
Exactly. You can take a much more scientific approach about it. Well, Ben, one final question for you. How do you think you've changed the most by getting involved in this field that's changing to help other people's change? What's for you personally?
Yeah, well, I think I've started to be a lot more data-driven about my life itself. So it's interesting. When I was finishing up my PhD at MIT, my wife was pregnant, my son was being born, and there's this class there called How to Make Almost Anything. And you literally learn how to make anything from a chair to, again, essentially from scratch, make a computer, right? And what I did at the end of that class was I decided I wanted to track how we were changing, how often we were changing my son's diapers. So I built him a changing table that it was sort of, used a milling machine, it was a robot changing table, so it looked like a robot. And then what I did is I embedded some sensors in the actual changing table. So what it did is, and the sensors were hooked up to a little computer, which the sensors would detect when you changed a diaper, and then it would insert into Google Calendar when you changed the diaper. But the important point is it actually turned out that this sensor, which uses sort of looks at the electrical field, actually detects difference between self and my wife.
Don't you? Oh, there you go. As I would also say that, you know, in God we trust, but all others need to bring data and statistics, right? Well, Ben Waber, thank you so very much for joining us again. Sociometricsolutions.com, his new book, People Analytics. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.